Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and thank you to everyone for joining us today. We're going to be taking a deep dive into tech capital. We're going to be looking at the latest developments. We're going to be touching on each of the portfolio companies, and we're going to be looking at some exciting developments we've seen so far this year for the company. And to do that, we're very kindly joined today by CEO Dr. Clifford Gross. Thank you for joining us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Jonathan. How are you keeping?
Very, very well. Thank you. We're off to a good start in markets so far this week. We've had a good, strong start to the year in London, and one of the best performers, I believe, so far this year in the AIM market is Tech Capital. Very strong start to the year, driven very much by the Microsalt IPO that we're going to be discussing on this call today, Cliff. But before we get into it, please would you be able to give us a brief introduction to Tech Capitals for those investors that may not be aware of the company, please?
Yeah, Tech Capital is an accelerator of university discoveries. We select them, we nurture them, we build companies around them. And what they have in common is if they're successful, they can make a positive impact on people's lives. And we think we do that better than any other aggregator or accelerator of university discoveries in the United Kingdom.
So as I said at the beginning, we're going to be touching on each portfolio company in turn. But I think the most important one for investors, given what's happened so far this year, they'd like to hear about is, of course, Microsalt. It listed in London earlier on this year, a storming start to life on the AIM markets. At one point, it was up nearly three times from the admission price. It is now its own listed company, and investors watching this can go and check out the most recent RNSs, and CEO Rick Guiney has done a number of presentations. But from your perspective, Cliff, when you're looking at what's happened with Microsalt, of course, there is a backdrop out there of uncertainty in markets. It is a fairly broad question, and this is probably a question about the process as opposed to the business at the point in time. And you know, it's a question about your choice of London for the IPO. But you know, going through that process of the IPO, you know, seeing what's happened so far with Microsalt, if you could do it again, is there anything that you'd do differently?
Yeah, I would definitely do it again.
Yeah.
You know, we own 77%+ of the company, and it's doubled since the IPO. But I would do it again because although the AIM market has suffered somewhat over the last 2 to 3 years, the all share index is down around 40%, which is always a difficult thing. But irrespective of that, I still think the AIM market has a vital place in the global ecosystem for commercializing early stage technology businesses. And we're actually grateful that it exists and we're able to participate in it. And we would certainly do not only the Microsalt deal again, but we would certainly do other deals on the AIM market as well.
We'll move on now and touch on guidance, Cliff, because that is the last company in the Tech Capital portfolio that's privately held. There have been a number of updates to the market in recent months, and one of those was about the new headquarters set to open later on in April, I believe. And that's a company that I'd like to go into a little bit more detail about now. So I think we'd start with the headquarters, if we may. It's a new facility in Boca Raton in Florida, as I said, due to come online, I believe, in April. What's so significant about this headquarters, Cliff, and what does it mean for guidance going forward in terms of the scalability of its business model?
Well, it's pretty remarkable if you can step back and just be philosophical about it for a tad. What Guidant has just built and is about to go public with is the world's first commercial-grade remote monitoring and control center for autonomous vehicles. That's a mouthful, I admit. But the investment thesis is this, and I could speak to this as a pilot. You know, planes have gotten a lot better in the last 30 years, and they've gotten better at detecting other planes, the actual planes themselves, collision avoidance, et cetera. But still, air traffic control has never been more important than it is today. And we think as autonomous vehicles come online of every stripe in large quantities, which is happening now, the moral equivalent of air traffic control for ground-based vehicles will be necessary to provide a layer of safety, protection, and assurance for the public. When there are millions of these autonomous vehicles piloting themselves, you really do want to have an eye in the sky, as it were, monitoring all these vehicles, hopefully helping protect the occupants, or if there are no occupants, the denizens that are outside the vehicles that might come in contact with them, providing the ability to call a first responder, and if a vehicle is operable, if it's gotten into a mishap, taking it off the roadway, doing all of this at a reliable 24/7, no nonsense, remote monitoring and control facility will be absolutely essential for the safe operation of vehicles anywhere on the earth. And so what Guidant has developed is not only this wonderful new facility, but all the technology that goes into it. And it's the lowest, to our knowledge, it's the lowest latency remote monitoring and control center in the world. And as a result of some forward-thinking activities on their part, they're introducing this year satellite monitoring as an additional backup to the mobile network. And they have global mobile network access, but they also have private LTE networks. But in addition to that, they'll have low Earth orbit satellite monitoring, which also is in the realm of 20 to 30 milliseconds delay time, glass-to-glass monitoring. Long and short of it is, they're building the prototype of what we think will be the normal remote monitoring and control in every territory on the Earth for autonomous vehicles. That's impressive for a young, small company to have taken that mantle and actually delivered the charge.
Thank you. Thank you. So I'm sure investors listening to this, Cliff, will be interested to know about the plans for Guidant going forward in terms of delivering the growth strategy. So in terms of funding, in terms of new initiatives that are happening at the company to deliver on those plans, is there anything that you can share at this point in terms of the plans to deliver on those goals?
Yeah, I think what comes to mind is Marcel Proust, you know, when he said discovery consists not in finding new lands, but in seeing with new eyes. There is a business model out there that has been incredibly successful for software companies that is leveraging VAR networks, value-added reseller networks, to get your software in the hands of the customers that need it most. Well, Guidant has embarked on this strategy, and they're signing up producers of autonomous vehicles and buses, for example, as value-added resellers. And they're signing up people that provide autonomous vehicle software to put the Guidant remote monitoring software in their software stack. And so these are basically resellers for Guidant. And as a result, they'll be launching projects all over the world in the next few years using this reseller network. Additionally, they have one business themselves through responding to RFPs and the like. And so that adds to that. But to scale the business, you really have to, I believe, leverage reseller networks. And Guidant knows that and is doing that. So that's very exciting. It allows for, truly exponential growth once you have the resellers in place.
Thank you. So, of course, Microsalt's listed earlier on this year, and I'm sure shareholders will be interested to hear your views on Guidant and a potential IPO there, being the last company in the portfolio that's still privately held. Are there any plans on an IPO in the near future? Are there any other agreements that you're working on to get to Guidant to where you want it to be?
Well, before I answer that question, although it's the only company in the portfolio currently that is not floated, I don't believe it's the last company in the portfolio. That's a time-limited expression. So we're constantly seeking to develop new portfolio companies, but we're doing it with care because you have to have the end game in sight before you pull the trigger on actually starting the company. Otherwise, you're not playing to win, and you need to do that. It's a very difficult market. You can't just sort of stumble into it. With regard to Guidant's exit, it's in earnest. It's too soon to say whether down the road an acquisition by a major company, either software company or vehicle company, or an IPO would be the preferred exit. Right now, Guidant's, I guess, laser-like focused on growth, on growing its customer base, on growing its, which is, by its nature, high recurring revenues. Once you monitor your vehicles, you don't suddenly decide one day, hey, we're not going to monitor those vehicles anymore. We've done enough of that monitoring stuff. No, it's sort of a lifetime decision. You monitor, when you start to monitor, you will monitor throughout the life cycle of your products. So I think it's too soon to say in earnest what the exit will be. But ultimately, there will be an exit, either a trade sale, a merger, or an IPO. Remember, we're an incubator. We're not like the librarian that doesn't want to lend out the books, you know?
Fascinating, Cliff. And you did allude to it there that, of course, Guidant isn't the last portfolio company. It's the one there at the moment which is yet to list. And that takes me very nicely into the next point, which is generative AI, because you've very recently set aside, I believe, £500,000 for investments in the area. And this is a particularly exciting area, I think, for investors at this point in time. It's in its infancy to some extent at the moment. So there's going to be a couple of points on this. Now, first of all, it would be around your views on the market at the moment and where you see this going and where you see the value for companies like yourself that are looking to make investments. And then the second point to this would be, how far along the road are you? Are there potential opportunities that you have your eyes on at the moment? I believe you've assembled a team that are conducting research in the area, so it'd be good to hear a little bit more about that.
Well, I'll take the first group of questions first, and then we'll go on to the timeline. Generative AI, it's truly remarkable, and it's extremely fresh. I mean, but really, OpenAI just came out, about a year and a half ago, and it came into the mainstream in 2023. So the industry is just over a year old. That said, it's already the growth estimates for 2024 overall, both services and products in Gen AI are reckoned to produce about 17 billion in sales this year. Of that 17 billion, about 6%, about 1.2 billion, will be the enhancement of traditional service businesses with generative AI. In other words, making a business that's currently providing, let's say, analytic services better, faster, and less expensive using generative AI. And so that's going apace now. And in boardrooms across the world, directors are having a discussion now as to what they should be doing with generative AI to improve the performance of their business and its longevity. And so it feels a lot. To me, it feels a lot like the introduction of the internet in terms of its sort of quantum leap forward and impactfulness on business writ large. And I can't imagine anything in the last 10 or 20 years that has such a strong potential to transform business in a positive way for the most part. There's always negative aspects too to new technologies. But in a positive way, which I tend to focus in, I think the transformation will be quite astounding. And we're just in the very, very early innings of it. So that said, our next portfolio company, we have our druthers, will be one that utilizes generative AI. And sort of as a note to that, Innovative Eyewear last year was the first company in the world to introduce a wearable product with generative AI. And they created an app called the Lucid app, which, working in conjunction with their smart glasses, enabled anyone who had a pair of their smart glasses to be able to access ChatGPT on the fly by pressing a button on their glasses. And they also developed the verbal interface. They were the first to make a voice interface for generative AI. Prior to that, you had to use 150-year-old QWERTY keyboard to ask a question, or that you got a response on your screen. But with the smart eyewear, innovative eyewear, they were able to have verbal interface for the first time and a wearable ChatGPT interface for the first time. So we've had some experience as a group with the incorporation of generative AI and the impact that it has on traditional products. I mean, we thought that the innovative eyewear glasses were smart prior to Gen AI. We didn't realize that they weren't quite that smart. You know, it was accessing Siri and Google Voice and Bixby and other digital assistants, and even Alexa, gives intelligence to your products. But that's kind of like a six-year-old, whereas generative AI is like having a graduate student at your disposal, or perhaps a professor, depending on your outlook, in your either your laptop or your wearable, et cetera. So eyewear has gotten smarter than it ever was this past year as a result of generative AI. And we think that's just an example of what's going to happen. It's not the end of the day. All products are going to get smarter, and services are going to get smarter with generative AI. It's an enormous sort of equalizer, and it will empower many, many new companies to do things that were not possible to be done before, or to do them much quicker and much less expensive. I know that's a lot, but that's our take on it. And we're really thrilled about the technology. We're pretty close, in our view, to launching a company with generative AI. We're hoping to do it by the summertime. And that will be our fifth portfolio company. And we think it's darn exciting, actually. Really, there's no other way to say it. I mean, it's a new vista. It's not just another technology. It's really, it really is very impactful to business and to life.
As you said, Cliff, certainly exciting times ahead, and I'm very interesting to hear that it could be by the summer. So I'm sure that's one that investors are going to be keeping a very close eye on. So I do want to ask a few questions now about innovative eyewear, because you touched on them there. Of course, the first company to launch smart eyewear enabled with ChatGPT last year. But that's just one side of the story, Cliff, because of course, there's a number of licensing deals with major brands, Reebok, Nautica, Eddie Bauer, and they're set to come on this year. How important are those deals and the launches of those products for Innovative Eyewear as a business going forward?
Well, if you study the eyewear industry, which is a wonderful example of a long-standing, large global industry that's ripe for transformation, the eyewear industry is $132 billion globally. And right now, about 1% of that industry is smart eyewear. It's negligible. It may not even be fully 1%. So it's really at the beginning stages. And a great analogy for the eyewear industry in terms of what direction it will travel in we think is the watch industry, which is also another wearable, which is also another big global long-standing industry, hundreds of years old. It's about $65 billion, about half the size of the eyewear industry globally. In 2015, about 1% of the watches were smart, 99% were traditional. A year and a half ago, that flipped over, and now the majority of new watches shipped are smart. That happened pretty quickly. And as the leader in smartwatches is Apple, and they never made a watch before 2015. Smart or otherwise. And now they shipped last year more watches than the entire Swiss watch industry shipped watches. Every company, every type, every price point, Apple shipped more watches than they did. And that's, some of those companies are, several hundred years old. So eyewear is going, in our view, going the way of the watch business and many other businesses too. I mean, refrigerators today are becoming smart. Ranges, power tools, cars, everything is benefiting from sort of on-the-fly intelligence. And that's accelerating now. So we think that's happening. But the other thing about the eyewear industry, the other lesson that we've tried to learn is... there was a great man named Leonardo Del Vecchio that built the leading eyewear company in the world, Luxottica. Fortunately, he passed away about a year and a half ago. And it's an amazing, his life story is truly remarkable. I won't get into it much, except that he was an orphan in Milan. And he became a machinist, and then he started making eyewear, and he had this epiphany that eyewear wasn't just a medical device you strapped onto your face. It really was a fashion accessory. That was his epiphany. And in Milan, it made sense to think that way because that's really it is still the fashion capital of the world. And it wasn't too difficult to find very high quality designers in Milan either. So he started licensing designer brands for eyewear. He was the first to do it. And when he passed away a year and a half ago, not only was he the wealthiest man in Italy and the fifth wealthiest man in Europe, he had assembled about 40 major eyewear brands. And that's what enabled Luxottica, in our view, to become the largest eyewear company in the world, because people were able to buy fashionable accessories that happen to also correct and protect your eyes, your vision. And so learning from that, we realize whether it's smart eyewear or traditional eyewear, people still want to have designer accessories because they're putting it on their faces. It's not just a medical device, although it's FDA cleared. So we decided to license some brands for smart eyewear. And we licensed initially the Nautica brand, and then the Eddie Bauer brand, and then the Reebok brand. All three of those brands are billion-dollar brands. They're all very well regarded. Nautica, this is the 41st year for Nautica. It's the 105th year for Eddie Bauer. And Reebok is quite a storied brand, which actually began in the UK making track shoes. Was then licensed to a startup in the US called Reebok. Paul Fireman, I was the CEO. I actually knew him, licensed some technology to him in my past life. And Reebok came out in the US, came out with the pump shoe. And it experienced phenomenal growth. So in such a short period of time, that they went back and they bought the parent company, Reebok, consolidated it together. And it became, at that point in time, the largest footwear company in the world. And so that is not a small thing to have the license to producing Reebok smart eyewear or producing Eddie Bauer smart eyewear or Nautica smart eyewear. So Innovative Eyewear has the license, the global exclusive license for all three for multiple years. And we think that will drive the smart eyewear business. It will not only drive the sales of Innovative Eyewear, but we think that will help drive the smart eyewear business because people will see that it's normal. It's a designer accessory. It looks great. And that's how people want to buy eyewear. If you go into any eyewear shop, whether it's in the US or the UK or anywhere else in the world, you have hundreds of styles, and they're usually divided across, a couple of dozen well-known brands, fashion brands. So we don't think smart eyewear will be sold differently than the way traditional eyewear is sold. And so we're very excited. They just launched, Innovative just launched a Nautica line. And it's really beautiful. It's certainly as handsome as the existing Nautica traditional eyewear. It's priced the same. It looks as good. It's lightweight. It's suitable for any prescription, all day wear. Plus, it allows you to stay connected to your digital life. So we think that's the way of eyewear in the future, not the distant future. We think the near-term future. And later this year, Innovative will launch the Eddie Bauer line and also the Reebok line and also the first safety eyewear. Millions of people worldwide wear safety glasses to protect their eyes against projectiles while working. And there is no smart safety eyewear. Well, Innovative is changing that, and they will have ANSI, the American National Standards Institute certified smart safety glasses available for the working person, also probably by the summertime this year, at a price point the working person will be able to afford. It's a very exciting time for Innovative Eyewear. They are truly being innovative. They have more than 110 patents and applications. And I think they, if they continue to execute as they have been, they will earn a piece of that very large global eyewear market, which is rapidly becoming smart in our view.
Thank you, Cliff. So in the last few months, Tech Capital said that they expect multi-million pound revenues for each of the portfolio companies in 2024. Now, given that we've seen Microsoft listed earlier on this year, and of course there's been developments across the portfolio, are there any a single portfolio company or portfolio companies from what you've seen in recent months you feel may exceed your prior expectations in the year ahead?
I think that prognostication is still accurate.
Thank you. Okay, so one final point here to finish things off, Cliff. What excites you the most about the year ahead for the portfolio companies? I don't know if you want to name specific things for individual companies or look at the macro picture, but it'd be good to hear your views as the CEO of Tech Capital, what you're most looking forward to over the next 12 months.
Well, in a word, growth. All four portfolio companies, without any hesitation, should experience significant growth calendar year 2024. And that will, because we're inextricably tied to them, that will lead to growth in our net assets, which is one of our core metrics for financial performance. The other metric is making a positive impact on people's lives. And we don't think they're disconnected. They're two sides of the same coin. So we're excited about the potential for growth. And we're also excited about having a fifth company in the generative AI space. And in that space, companies grow if they hit it correctly with the right technology and the right solution set for their customers, they can grow very precipitously. So we're excited about that as well. So we think it's going to be a good year. I'm not going to front run results at this point because that would be inappropriate to do. But we, even looking at the flash valuations of our current portfolio companies, we think there's significant increase in value in our portfolio today over our H1 results, which were reported for last year. And we think that will continue. Guidant itself is private, and they'll be doing a financing, or they're doing a financing around as we speak. It'll take probably a few months to finish up, but they're using the US private equity markets for that, and they have engaged with a major investment bank in the US to run that deal, and that should be at an uplift to our current valuation of Guidant. Time will tell if that's an accurate statement, but we believe they have progressed quite handedly since where they were at when they did their last round, which was at roughly a 20 million pre-money. So I think it's going to be a very good year for the company. I'm very grateful for our shareholders that enabled us to get to this point. And they not only were generous in terms of participating, but they were also patient, or most of them were patient. And we think we have proven out our model in the sense that we are able to find compelling technologies, acquire them at good prices, build companies around them, attract capable management, and achieve exits, all in a difficult capital markets environment with relatively small amounts of capital. And so we'd like to continue with that exercise, and we think it will produce good results for our shareholders and the customers that we serve.
So, Clifford, thank you very much for being with us today, and certainly looking forward to having you back on in the coming months, especially to hear a little bit more about the AI story as that develops. And thank you very much to everyone for watching. Thank you.
Thank you, Jonathan. Appreciate the opportunity.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember, all investment involves risk.